Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. And today we have a lovely lady for you. Really looking forward to this conversation. We need to get more adoptees on the show, right? We're doing this, all these episodes for adopted parents, and we're trying to get more adoptees on. So it's great to have a fellow adoptee on the show. Claire Magenheimer, welcome. Thank you for making time for us today.
Well, thank you, Simon. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm super grateful that I've been invited on your show. So thank you.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Claire, and then we'll get into some of the learnings that you've had still fairly recently from what we've just been talking about, some learnings, how you've come to terms with being a transracial adoptee, the learning process you've been through, some of the how you've processed some of the feelings of shame and loss. But yeah, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure, I'd love to. So I'm Claire Magenheimer and I'm 48 years old. I was adopted, well, I was born in South Korea and adopted to my family who are white American. They raised me in Massachusetts. So I grew up in outside of Boston in a community called Wellesley, Massachusetts. So that's where I grew up. And I stayed there until I was 18. Then I went to college down in Maryland. And so after college, I stayed in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, which I lived there for 30 years. And I'm a single mother. I raised my daughter in Virginia, and now I am off traveling. So I started traveling last year, about a year ago, and I went and spent time in St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands, and now I'm over in Cape Town, South Africa, which I'm loving. And yeah, so I'm here, and I'm still on this journey. And so I'm learning every day. It's a whole process. But I'm just so excited because I have overcome so many struggles, just from being adopted and, transracial adoptee, and also, my own struggles with mental health challenges. And so just life, so I'm just thrilled to be able to share my story and what I can learn, what I have learned from my story, and share that with other people, because hopefully someone else can resonate with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that we talked about last time is how we don't often talk about this, actually, like how a physical challenge. So I think you were you diagnosed with diabetes, if I remember rightly?
Yes.
So this was, I think, did you, that was a kind of a wake-up call for you, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about that and what you've learned from that?
Yeah. So that was, like you said, a wake-up call. Being an adoptee, and I don't have access to my medical history or my, my family history. So that was one challenge. I had no idea if I was predisposed to diabetes or not, but basically I was just living my life, coasting along, kind of, I'd say surviving. I was in survival mode. I was 37 years old, raising my daughter by myself, and just juggling full-time career, being a mom, trying to navigate life. And I wasn't living a very healthy lifestyle. So I was, not eating the right foods, not exercising, not treating my body with love or respect, or doing any of the things that I do now. So I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and I was just woke up, and I it was a wake up call for real. Like I was just shook. I did take it into my hands, and I did a lot of, research. I got with nutritionists and personal trainers and coaches. So I really went out there, and I decided I'm not going to just take this medical condition and let it defeat me. So I did get healthy. So I knew what kind of foods to eat. I dropped 30 pounds. I got into the gym. I started walking and jogging, and I figured out how to reverse diabetes. And so I did that like within about 6 months. So I'm super proud of what I've accomplished there, but that kind of sparked a whole journey, a health journey for me. So, and that has led into from the health journey was starting off, you know, with my medical condition. And then it led into more of a fitness journey because I caught the fitness bug and I was like, you know, and doing fitness competitions and, you know, and bodybuilding. And I love that. But then that led me to realize I needed to be healthy on the inside, not just, you know, physically healthy, but also you know, more self-love and compassion for myself and mindset. That was huge. My personal development journey and mindset journey, things that I learned and which affected my happiness and which in turn allowed me to go down this whole exploration of learning about, you know, my challenges as an adoptee and really being able to be at a point where I felt I was ready to handle some of these issues that I had been burying and pushing down for so many years. And it just kind of came out. I think that your body, I mean, like your body holds on to the trauma and your body knows what it can handle. And so it won't really allow this to come out until you're ready to handle it. So I felt like my journey in life, kind of, I'm grateful for it because it allowed me to kind of unload this little by little. So I kind of had some pivotal moments in my journey. So that was one of them, being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And then the second was my wake up call as far as like my mental health and my my journey for, you know, self-love and happiness.
Yeah. It's interesting because there's some similarities and some similarities there. So you know, I'm a white guy adopted by white parents, so I don't have that extra level of complexity that that goes with transracial adoption. But the similarities were, you know, you moved from, and I love the way you put it, sort of like you're kind of healthy on the outside to healthy on the inside. So the physical condition led you to sort of open the door to the mental health and the personal development side. For me, it was when business development, I was obsessed with business development. And then when I got to some business success, when that didn't make me happy, that kind of opened the door for personal development. And then that opened the door for exploring the what people call the primal wound, which for me is that's a subject for it's on the website. It's on certainly I've done a couple of single episodes, as in they're not interviews, it's just me talking about the primal wound. I've done some interviews with it as well, so people can check those out in the old back catalogue of the podcast. I'm not going to do this here because today it's about you and it's about your journey, Claire. So can you tell us a little bit more about the mental health change insight that you had and that learning journey that you're on and that we're all on? We're all on a journey. We're all curious. We're all continuing to learn.
Yeah, sure. I would love to share that. It was hard for me. It was really difficult, as is with anyone struggling with mental health issues. And I didn't understand what I was going through. All I know is that what I know now is that I was struggling with, you know, my grieving and loss. And I didn't understand any of this from being adopted. And basically the first, you know, year and a half of my life was just erased, or just, I don't know anything. You know, I don't know anything about my biological family, my who cared for me. All I know is that I ended up in an orphanage, and then I was adopted to my parents, my adopted parents. And so I had this hole, this gap, you know, and I went through life feeling, I felt it in my heart. It was like, I had a broken heart my whole life and I felt just broken. And so what it looked like for me, Simon, was when I was growing up, I didn't have any healthy ways to express my emotions as a baby. I never cried. My parents told me I never cried. I just was happy all the time and accepted everything. And so I never complained. I was a perfect child. And I feel that deep down inside, I had this fear of being abandoned again. So I had to be perfect. Otherwise, you know, I would be sent back. As you know, several family members have, you know, they joked and said, oh, you know, I wish I could send you back, you know, and that's like kind of playing as children, but still, you know, it hurts. Yeah. So I had these feelings that I was probably just suppressing all of my emotion because I didn't have any ways to express myself. I didn't have no learned way, like no one taught me how to do that. And then I had this fear that if I was imperfect, then I would be sent back. So it actually manifested in like skin rashes. Like I had no way to, you know, release any of my trauma. So I would have these skin rashes all the way from my head to my toe. And I would like break out all the time in hives. And, you know, like I have a scar right here where the doctors tried to treat it with like steroid creams or something. And it like burned me. So I left a scar. And, you know, so it was terrible. And so I feel like that was my way of dealing with it because I couldn't deal with it. So then as I got older, like around my teenage years, I started to struggle with depression and anxiety. And I just became very rebellious just because I felt like I was like trapped, you know, and I didn't have any way to express anything. And I just remember every day I would cry. You know, I just couldn't deal with all the feelings. I didn't know what I was feeling. It just felt terrible to me. So, and I had no understanding of what I was going through. So, I mean, I was depressed. And so I was trying to, you know, deal with it, but I had no way to do that. So then it continued on through college, I'd say. And then it got really bad in college also. And, you know, that's when I started therapy and a treatment for my mental health. So that's kind of when it all started. And then as I progressed, as I got older, I began to learn healthier ways to deal with it and understand that all of the things that I was going through as, you know, a child, as a teenager, and as a young adult were things that like, I didn't understand why I was doing it, but I had some very unhealthy addictive behaviors. And, you know, it all kind of trace back to the beginning.
Yeah. So did it start to ease when you started therapy in college?
That's a good question. I would say it only did just because by the time I got to college, I actually was surrounded by more people who understood what I was going through. There were more teachers and people that I could actually relate to. Like, you know, I studied sociology. And so one of my professors in sociology, you know, I had like, you know, some kind of a openness where I could share what I was going through. So then I was going to therapy, but at the same time, I didn't feel like I really was understood by my therapist because I had never been referred to like a Korean therapist or an adoptee therapist, you know, like someone who could actually relate to my issues as a Korean adoptee. So I never felt like I was relatable in that way. So I was helped, but not the kind of help I feel would have really benefited me had I understood that I needed to go find someone who I could relate to and really feel comfortable confiding in them because of my own personal story.
Yeah. Fascinating, because this everybody talks these days, obviously, about adoption competent therapist, don't they? That's That's the jargon, but we're going back whatever 30 years or so, 28, 27, 30 years or so to when you were at college. Mm-hmm. And that category just wasn't about it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was part of my struggle growing up, Simon, because I was surrounded by people who I couldn't really relate to on many levels, you know, just because racially we were different and our experiences were different. And I couldn't relate to anyone, you know, so that was a real struggle of mine.
Yeah. And yet you were functioning at a high level. Somebody, I once saw a therapist, so I don't think I'd call her adoption competent, and this was only like 6 years or so ago. She shared her notes with me, and I think she put on high functioning. You know, it was just full of loads of jargon and rubbish that didn't really mean a lot to me. But she put something on about high functioning and that. So you have been, you've been to college. You've raised your daughter on your own, despite all the tough stuff that you've been through. You were functioning at a certain level of okayness, or I mean, you managed to get through, but inside it was a lot trickier.
Yeah. So like I mentioned, Simon, I raised my daughter and I was basically surviving, you know, just like doing whatever I needed to do to get by and not, we all strive to be perfect parents. And of course, none of us are perfect. And I am the first to admit that, she has turned out to be a wonderful human being. So I did something right. but I, you know, definitely could have used more help, more resources, more of everything. Because I only did the best I could with the tools I had, which were not many tools at all.
Yeah. So if the, obviously the therapy wasn't by an adoption competent therapist, it didn't really help you. There was some easing simply in, as you say, as being understood perhaps by some of your teachers, professors at college. What was it that led, because I see this, obviously, the listeners can't see you because they're just listening, right? But I see this flourishing, thriving adoptee. I hear the stuff that you've been through in the past. What is it that you learned that helped you move from surviving to thriving?
Yeah, I think what I learned, that the first realization that, I feel like a lot of people can relate to my story, and a lot of even non-adoptee parents can relate to my story, just surviving, you know, and trying to get by as a parent and just trying to get through life, despite having mental health challenges and all the other challenges as a parent. But what I realized at some point when I was really, I would have to say, I was at my lowest of all lows. Everything had, like I said, had been pushed down so long for so many years that it was when my daughter went off to college, and it was, you know, I knew that she was going to leave for college someday. I mean, we were very close, and, you know, and I knew that this day was coming. And part of my limitations and my traumas that I dealt with was, you know, my fear of abandonment and people leaving, especially people who are close to me. So that was something I always dealt with, my fear in all of my relationships. It was fear of abandonment. And I feel like I manifested the ultimate, you know, leaving. The abandonment happened in most of my relationships, personal relationships, because I had this fear. And that's something I've learned through a lot of mindset work on myself and personal development, you know, that you can, if you live your life out of fear and you think every day, I don't want this to happen, I don't want this to happen, your actions then start to align with your actual thinking and your what you're thinking about fearing the worst to happen, and it will eventually come true. That is what I believe. And that's what happened with all of my relationships. So I knew that my daughter was going to be leaving for college, and I was so excited. She's very bright, and she got into a great school, and I was so excited for all of her opportunities. However, deep inside, I was like falling apart. Like, I had to hold it together. And for her, because, you know, she needed me as her mom. So I sent her off to college. I remember dropping her off, and then I just lost it. It all fell apart afterwards in the couple of weeks and months to follow. I mean, I literally fell apart. Simon, I became so dysfunctional. I couldn't keep a job. I lost my business. I couldn't get out of bed in the morning. I couldn't do my laundry. I couldn't go grocery shopping. I couldn't do these basic things. I couldn't adult, you know, so I had kind of reverted back to a child, and I did not have these coping mechanisms. So that's when I realized that I have to pull it together for myself. I'm the one who is responsible. I had to be the person. No one was coming to save me. Like, no one was going to come over and say, okay, I'm going to change your life. Here's what we're going to do. No one. It was me. And so I realized that. So I reached out, I got more therapy, and I went to different types of therapy. So I kind of said, okay, well, this therapy in the past hasn't worked for me. So I need to change, you know, my approach. And so I did. And a little by little, I started to get healthier. And I did a lot of reading about, you know, self-development and, you know, self-help. And I did a lot of personal development work. And so that was like, you know, 5 years ago. And so I've done a lot of work on myself to get me to this place where I feel like, even though I'm still like, you see me as thriving, and I feel like in some parts of my life, yes, I am. But other parts, this fear of abandonment, this fear of some of the things that I've felt, you know, from being adopted, like not knowing my history, I don't feel grounded, or I've been working on feeling more grounded and knowing my roots and knowing who I am. But one of the things that I struggle with is being able to stand up for myself. And it kills me because I want to, like, I have this persona that I want to project, is that I'm very strong and I'm very empowering. And I feel like I am to a point, but when I face things like, you know, in the past, I faced a lot of racism. It's affected me like a lot growing up. Like every day I was the target of racism, stereotyping, bullying. And all these years, like, I've wanted to stand up for myself and to tell people how I felt. And it's so hard to do. And I don't know, I think a lot of other adoptees can relate to this, but I haven't felt the sense of, you know, like knowing my worth and knowing who I am and being grounded, which I see these qualities in my daughter and other people. And I admire them so much because she is like that. And I learn from her every day. And I was like, you know, oh, she's like my hero. So these are areas where you might see this, but I feel imposter syndrome every single day. Like when I'm running my business and I feel like I should be more competent and, you know, better at what I do, I feel extreme imposter syndrome. So these are things that I think are normal. We all kind of feel these, but I feel them almost to the point that is crippling, that it just holds me back. So I've had to do so much work and so much, you know, development on myself to overcome some of these things in order to survive and function.
Yeah. Wow. But you're still working on them, right?
I am. I'm working on them every day. Okay. Yeah. I'm so, not going to give up now.
So ask me a question.
Okay. So as a business owner, one thing I share with you was my imposter syndrome. Like the other day I was invited onto another podcast, and it was a live video.
A live stream.
And So that's one thing I struggle with, is showing my face and like being live and just showing who, my true self, because I've all my life I've felt like I've hid behind a mask, you know, and this is something that I've struggled with, coming out and being my true authentic self. And so going live on a webinar is like, oh, it's like probably like public speaking or skydiving or something, like it's very, it's scary for me. So like hours up until the time I was going to go on to this webinar, I was super nervous. I was super anxious. I was like shaking. I was like, I could not shake this feeling that I was like, no, I can't do this. I can't do this. But I had to talk myself into it. So then I needed a big energy shift. So like 15 minutes before, I cranked up the music and I started dancing just to have this huge energy shift in my body. And it worked, because I was like, okay, I calmed down my nerves. But my question to you is, how do you deal with this? Like, what do you do? What kind of tools do you have to deal with this imposter syndrome and doing these kind of podcasts?
Sometimes it stops me doing stuff and sometimes it doesn't, but 99% of the time it doesn't stop me doing anything. I struggle perhaps a little bit more, or I have struggled with low response rates, we call it. Yeah, so I'm not bothered. I'm not bothered about going on a live stream. I just do it and get on with it, you know. But I'll wake up I woke up in the morning thinking about how I'm going to make more of a change in the world. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, the stuff gets me down like that. For me, it's about being okay with not being okay. Mm-hmm. So if we're always okay with not being okay, we're always okay, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Good.
So, you know, this stuff is, you know, you've used the word insight, you've used the word realization. This stuff is, it's about stuff that we get in our bones, not in our heads, right? So this is my world, not my theory. So being okay with not being okay.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing that feeling okay is different to being okay. So being okay with feeling like SH1T.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I can relate to that for sure.
So if we're, what I used to do is I used to, this is about 5 years ago, I was talking to one of my coaches, mentors, and it became clear to me that I was worried about worrying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I was worried about worrying. And then it becomes like a big worry ball, right? Whereas, whereas, you know, like, okay, so I worried.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what?
And how did you deal with that worry?
Well, it's not a how thing. It's like not being bothered by it. So, you know, like sometimes somebody cuts me up, you know, like in the on the road. Yeah. So somebody doesn't let me out or cuts me up or something like that. Sometimes that bothers me and sometimes it doesn't. Right. There's no strategy. I don't have a strategy for it. It's just as we grow, as we understand who we truly are, less things cheeses off.
So true. Yeah, something came to mind when you said that. I mean, like, I think, you know, it comes down to a lot of the mindset work that I do with myself and some of my clients, because I'm a health coach. And a lot of it is, you know, how do you get motivated and how do you change your mindset? And so, like, reframing, you know, how you think about things is a big one, because if, like you're saying, if you get cut off by someone, you know, and you could have two or a couple of ways to deal with it. Some people get road rage. And back where I'm from in Virginia, there's a lot of road rage. There's a lot of uptight, stressed out people. And you do one thing and forget it. They're laying on their horn. They're giving you the finger. They're cursing at you and all of that just because you made a, you know, a little turn in front of them. So you can think of it as, you know, oh, they're pissing me off. They're doing it on purpose, or, you know, they ruined my day. Or you can reframe your way of thinking and say, okay, well, they're human just like me. Maybe they didn't see me, or maybe they're really in a hurry to get back home because maybe they have to use a bathroom really badly or maybe something, you know? So I try to, like, reframe it in my mind. So it's not like they're doing it intentionally to piss me off, because if we think like that, we can, that can change our day and it can go downhill really, really quickly. So yeah, the worrying is another one. Like, the worry is kind of a learned behavior. It's your response to an emotion. And then, like, a lot of times, especially now, there's a lot going on in the world and it's hard not to worry, you know, and there's a lot of things that we cannot control in our world and our circumstances. And so sometimes we tend to want to worry as a way to feel like we're in control, I guess, so that, you know, this worrying is our way of thinking, okay, I can control the situation by worrying about it. And then that's like your learned response to it all the time. You worry and worry and worry. But how do you get out of that habit of worrying? It's a learned behavior. So there's a lot of techniques that I've learned how to deal with it myself, because I worried. I was like just a big ball of worry. And so a lot of those things that have changed my life, I really am grateful for being able to just like breathing techniques. That's a big one. Breath work. I do breath work every day because otherwise I get so stressed out. And then, like, you know, like the stress levels rise, your cortisol levels rise, and that's not healthy at all. It can cause a lot of unhealthy things to happen. So yeah, I get that. The worry, we have to do our best and we have to, you know, learn how to deal with them.
Well, I've got a slightly different approach to that, I think. So there's worry, and then there's worry. This is just my learning, right? There's worry, and then there's worrying about worrying. So it escalates. I've been thinking about this while I was swimming today, actually, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea that came to me last week is we're all trying to change our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us are trying to change our thoughts, right? Trying to change our thoughts. And yet, when we're at our happiest, we haven't got a lot on our mind.
True. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And changing thoughts is kind of like a uphill battle, really. And I've tried it. It didn't really work for me. I didn't really get to peace. Peace is when we've not got a lot on our mind. So like for me, not worrying about worrying means I've got less on my mind. When I've got less on my mind, I'm in the moment. I'm not really bothered. And I'm just cracking on with life. I heard the opposite of this. A guy, an English guy who is a very big sports, a rugby star here in England, who he kicked. He's a kicker, so like the field goals in American football. He used to kick the goals for the English rugby team, and he kicked us to the World Cup in Champions of the World in 2003, I think it was. A guy called Johnny Wilkinson. And he talked about being involved in the game, and then the whistle goes, right? And there's a penalty, and the penalty means that he's gonna the game is gonna stop, and he's gonna have to kick the goal.
Okay.
And it'll be and either it, the goal's about him, right? So everything's okay in his world. He's lost in the game. He's not lost in thought. He's just doing his thing. And then the whistle goes, and suddenly up comes this fear, right? Mm-hmm. But that fear is not who he is.
Mm-hmm.
It captivates him.
Mm-hmm.
So in those circumstances, he would be worried about kicking the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd be worried about how his worrying mm-hmm. may lead him to miss.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just escalates, because our focus, instead of our focus being on the the truth of who we are, that unlimited potential, if the sky is our unlimited potential, we're focusing on the cloud,
mm-hmm.
and that's all we can see, because we've lost sight of the potential of who we are.
Yeah, I love that example. That is super, super, it's a great example to use, because I can picture, like when you're telling that story, I could actually picture that what was happening on the football field and doing that, because I have used visual, it's almost like visualization. I've used that. I played soccer growing up. And so I actually, before I knew it was a thing, I used visualization to do the opposite effect. So I would visualize myself playing, scoring goals, and not just doing the winning, but everything leading up to it, like the warm up, the, you know, passing the ball and, you know, doing the plays and, you know, all of the stuff that would lead up to the goal. But when you visualize what you want to happen, that's very powerful. And you can use that to do anything you want in life. But then people, like I talked about, is like when you let your fears get in the way and you're afraid of, you know, like my thing was abandonment, or you're afraid to fail, and that's all you're thinking about, then your actions are going to take on, they're going to align with whatever it is that you're thinking or visualizing. So that is what I think is a big problem in people. We need to shift the mindset from letting our fears take over and steer us in the direction of failure or what we don't want to happen, instead thinking about what we do want to happen, because what we do want to happen is, you know, like that's like you said, we want to be free, we want to feel, you know, like happy and peaceful. And I think that's what we're all striving for. Like I think successful people talk about success and like what do you want in life, and I think what I want is I want to feel free, like, you know, free of feeling trauma and anxiety and triggers, you know, like certain things trigger me. And I know when I am triggered, that feeling of being triggered, that's an area in my life that I'm not free. And so that means that for what I will do is dive into that feeling and think about, I'll ask myself, well, what makes me feel triggered? And what about it? And because usually when you feel triggered, like if someone said to you, Simon, hey, You have purple hair. And I'm looking at you right now, it's clearly not purple, and you know it's not purple. But would that bother you? Would that cause you to feel triggered at all?
No.
Because you know it's not true. But when someone says something to you that you deep down inside know a little bit is true, like if you have an insecurity about something and someone calls it out and triggers you and you feel that, that's like your insecurity coming up, it's an area that you're not free. And so what I want to feel is not triggered in any way. I want to feel at peace with myself, who I am. And you could tell me, Claire, you have purple hair. And I'd be like, okay, doesn't bother me because I know I don't have purple hair.
Yeah. So we aren't our feelings though, right?
No, we are not our feelings. And that's a good question. Feelings, I used to be my feelings. I used to embrace all my feelings and be like, oh, I'm so sad. I'm so lonely. I'm so depressed. I'm so angry. I'm so shameful, all these things. When you think about it as like just clouds going by in the sky, they're just clouds. There goes one. And if you just notice it and let it just kind of like sit there, and if you can distance yourself from it, I find journaling helps with that. And just being self-aware that you're feeling this and distancing yourself from your feeling and emotion, it helps. And then you could just let it go and just say, okay, I felt that. Now I'm going to move on and feel something that I want to feel, like gratitude or love or peacefulness.
So for me, you know, upstream of feelings and thoughts, and upstream of thoughts is who we truly are. Mm-hmm. And yet, that's the sky. So I've heard of a guy, my favorite mentor at the moment is a guy called Rupert Spira. Mm-hmm. And he talks about, he uses this sky analogy, and he talks about the thoughts being like birds, because they come and go and very quickly, right? Feelings being like clouds, mm-hmm. but the true self of who we are as being the sky, and the sky is obscured by the clouds. Mm-hmm. But you know, what's happening for us, our thoughts, our feelings, our situation, the drama that we're caught up in, our businesses, our podcasts, our books, our blog posts, our relationships, all of that stuff, right? It's all really loud. Mm-hmm. And it gets our attention. Mm-hmm. So it's like a big brass band making a whole load of noise, or a rock band with loads of heavy guitar riffs and bass solos and all that sort of malarkey and all that. So it makes a lot of noise. But the little peaceful voice of who we truly are is completely, the sky is mm-hmm. drowned out. The quiet voice is drowned out by the noise. The sky is hidden by the clouds. Who we truly are is completely obliterated by our thoughts, our feelings, our history, our relationships, what's going on in the world. The whole malarkey is a massive distraction from who we are.
Yeah, I love that. The analogy really works. Yeah, that's pretty powerful.
And the power grows mm-hmm. as this stuff transitions from a bumper sticker to a nice idea that Simon came up with, a theory in his head, mm-hmm. to a feeling in his heart, to a belief in my bones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that.
It's not like a times table. You know, we know that 2 times 2 is always 4, right? It doesn't change. it's a once or nothing. What we're talking about here is an understanding with growing power and profundity.
Mm-hmm.
Not once we've heard it, that's it, done.
Mm-hmm.
It's an evolution of which, you know, like we're on the life's learning curve forever.
Absolutely. Yeah, and thank you so much for bringing that up, because that just reminds me how important it is to look at your mind as one area that's always changing, and mindset work is so big and important, because you can always change your mindset and grow your mindset, and having that growth mindset is what I believe, you know, leads us to being motivated to keep progressing in life and keep learning and going on this journey without stopping and feeling stagnant. Because when we stop learning and we feel stagnant and stuck in a rut, then we become unhappy. And it's just like this vicious cycle. But when we're growing and we're learning and moving forward and progressing in life, it brings happiness and joy and allows us to spread that light and knowledge and learning to other people, which is what you're doing. And I think that's a wonderful thing. And yeah, and that's just one message I have to listeners, especially adoptive parents, is that it's just an ongoing process of learning, which the learning is a shared process. And I think it needs to be shared by both the adoptee and the adopted parent. And it's not just the responsibility for the adoptee to go through this journey and learn and to figure it out. But I think it's the responsibility of the parent as well to share that learning process, and learn how to have the open communication and learn how to find the resources and tools to help their children through this learning process. Because it's hard, it's a hard road to go alone and to not feel like there's support there. So that's something that, I wish I had more. I understand, my parents were working with the tools that they had and they did the best they could. But I feel like it is a responsibility now that we are in this era where we have so much knowledge and so many resources at our fingertips, with the internet and so many organizations here to help and support adoption process. The learning has to be there, and we cannot stop learning and stop being open to learning.
Yeah. And talking about resources, we've talked a little bit about adoption trauma as well. I'm going to put a link in to a really great YouTube clip from this chap that I'm talking about, Rupert Spira, who addresses trauma. It's not adoption specific trauma, but it's trauma, and he has a great way of expressing that far more clearly than me. So I'm going to put that link in, and I'll see a link to you, your social as well on there in the show notes. So as always, listeners, check out what the guest is doing. And what is there a question that I've not asked you that you'd like to?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I appreciate you sharing the link. I'm definitely going to check that out. I think that I've really shared a lot here, and so have you. And I don't know if there's anything else that the listeners would want to know, but they can definitely, if there's questions, they can feel free to reach out to me. I'm, an open book, and I will share anything they want to know. And I'm here to help and help others go through their own journey, with the whole either being adopted or the adoptee. I definitely would like to share what I know about the process, and hopefully that has reached someone and someone can resonate with my story and what I've learned and taken away. I'm still learning. So maybe next time I come back, I'll have more things to share with you and share with the listeners.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned being about, I don't know, 20 minutes, half an hour ago, you mentioned having a broken heart. What I see now, Claire, is a, a heart that has healed and is just bursting to share and help others.
I feel that. I feel that, and I receive that because it's true. I mean, I went through so many years of my life just feeling broken, and I was going through trying to, with all these things I was trying to do to fill this broken, you know, this void in my body, in my heart. And I think that's something that I have picked up from speaking with other adoptees. Like, I've connected with thousands of other, not only Korean adoptees, but just adoptees in general. And, you know, going through life feeling like we're broken, we're unworthy. This is a theme that a lot of us share. And I'm sure that you can probably relate to some of this as well. Like, you know, yeah, feelings sure. of loss and grief. Yeah.
The biggest learning for me, and I've done most of my personal development, well, in fact, all my personal development, apart from the stuff that I get talking to guests, right? I've done it outside of the adoption community. And the big thing that I learned was that none of them feel that they're good enough either.
No.
I think that as an adoptee, I have hung my low self-esteem on a peg called adoption. And I think that we all have a peg or several pegs that we hang stuff on. We, the human race. And you talked about rewriting the story, I think, last time we spoke. For me, it was about realizing, before we can rewrite the story, it's realizing that the voice in our head is telling us a story, as in it's a work of fiction, not fact. I'm talking about my own stuff here, right? It's the comedy channel, not CNN. it's not news. It's not news. It's not a documentary. It's fiction. It's drama. It's all encompassing, and yet none of what the voice in my head tells me about me is true.
Yeah, that's huge. Once you can realize that, you can change your story. You have the power to change your story however you want. And even if it's like, you know, things that you've held onto from the past, and you don't know what exactly happened, like if there's trauma there that you don't know and you can't recall, because none of us can really remember things like before a certain age. I know that there's stuff that happened to me, and I can spend all my time worrying and making up stories about what happened. But in order to release that trauma and move past it, we don't need to remember all of that. And so, like, just being able to find healthy ways to release some of that trauma has been really helpful for me, and just, you know, going through my journey and being able to live a more happy life, and not letting those stories that, you know, you were talking about hold me back. And they're really just fears and limiting beliefs and things that I've made up about, you know, my past experiences. But at some point you have to ask yourself, how is this benefiting me? And is this serving me any purpose in life today? By listening to those stories and listening to that voice, because it's not. You might think it's protecting you in some way, but it's not. It's holding you back from who you want to be and how you want to live your life. And I'm ready to break free of that, you know? I'm good ready. On. Yeah.
Good on you. Thanks a lot, Claire. It's been a beautiful conversation. I've learned so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Simon. I appreciate it. You're doing great work. Thank you.
Thank you too, listeners, and we'll speak to you very soon. Bye-bye.